always greener on the other side. Caterpillar to a butterfly. Bye bye butterfly.
It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
Hey, good Saturday morning. It's Green and Growing right here on your radio, 95.5 WSB in Atlanta. And cicadas, you have seen that in the headlines over the last few months here. I know you all have concerns, and I want to quell your fears. I want to really explain this to you to make sure we're all on the same page. And I have searched far and wide online, and I have found just the right person to set us straight. Dr. Jean Kritsky, Professor Emeritus of Biology at Mount St. Joseph University in Cincinnati, joins me on the phone. Hey, Dr. Kritsky, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Wonderful. And it's good to have you here in Atlanta. Thank you so much for taking the time. If I can recall correctly, my memory's not great, but maybe back in 2021, Brood X was like the largest brood of the 17-year cicadas, made headlines in the Ohio River Valley area. What was that like for all of you there?
Well, for those of us who lived in the Ohio Valley, and Cincinnati was one of the larger emergencies we had, it was an amazing event. It started on the 13th of May, with just a few locations having rather large emergencies. And then by the 17th, massive numbers came out. You would easily see several hundred in your backyard each night for about 9 to 10 days. It's really cool because what happens is that the nymphs crawl out of the ground and they find a vertical surface. They crawl up that surface and they split their skins, and it's all white adult cicada sort of wriggles its way out, freezes abdomen, does a sip, grabs hold of the skin of the old shell of the immature sage, expands its wings, and then starts turning dark. And that process takes about 3 hours on average.
Wow!
And then they crawl to the tops of the trees if they're in a tree, and they continue their maturation process, and they don't start singing for 5 days. You'll see these cicadas coming out. And people know there's going to be a lot of calling. Well, just be patient. You'll be hearing it within a week.
And it is a very loud, almost alarming sound if you've never heard it before. For someone who's not seen one, Gene, what would you liken a cicada to? What insect is it similar to?
Well, they're closely related to our annual cicadas, and we have several species in Georgia. But these are have red eyes, black bodies, and orange-tinged wings. And their closest relatives include things like aphids. They're distantly related to bed bugs, but they don't invade a home. Aphids are some of the more closer relatives you'll see in the insect world. They're not locusts. They're not grasshoppers or crickets. And back about in the 1715 was the first time we have records of someone calling these insects locusts.
Hmm.
And that, of course, is an error. It was realized pretty quickly by the late 1700s. People, the scientific community knew they weren't locusts, but general populace and the popular literature were calling them locusts all the way well into the early 20th century.
And that's got some biblical, you know, interpretations, whereas cicadas, not so much. Not really mentioned in the Bible, right?
No, they talk about locusts. And indeed, the name locust came by 17, as I mentioned, 1715. And that was because the inhabitants were trying to make sense of these insects, they turned to the King James Version of the Bible. And, of course, John the Baptist ate locusts. Well, the indigenous populations of North America were eating locusts. Oh, so they thought, oh, that's interesting. These come out in big, big numbers, and like a plague. And that was like the locust plague of Egypt. And so they found those in a couple other references in the Bible that basically suggested they must be locusts. And it wasn't until the 1730s that a man by the name of Paul Dudley wrote a scientific paper and submitted to the Royal Society in London. And after they read the paper, they got into a big brouhaha about, well, he's mistaken a cicada for a locust.
Huh.
And they wrote him, and he said, oh, no, this is definitely, I have it from Reverend Weld that this is definitely a locust. What gets me is the Royal Society arranged to have some locusts from Cairo, Egypt, to be shipped to him in Boston, Massachusetts. This is the 1730s, and they got there.
Oh, my. And then a side-by-side comparison revealed that it is not the same.
They are not the same. In fact, he even made that comment in a letter to him. He said, I hope you'll forgive my error, but whatever the scientific community believes, the local people will call them locusts for years to come.
Yeah. Well, a lot of folks may be feeling that anxiety, Dr. Kritsky, with the emergence of the 13-year group and the 17-year group coming on. When will we expect to see this activity maybe beginning more specifically in the Southeast?
We have had reports that I've verified now that adult periodical scales have emerged in Macon and around Augusta, not in big numbers, you know, like five or six. So this happens. You know, they emerge when the soil temperature reaches 64 degrees Fahrenheit and after you've had a bit of a rain. And so in some cases, those local environments, there might be one that's conducive for the cicada to start coming out. And so we have now a few records now from Georgia. We have some from Columbia, South Carolina as well.
Okay. And you mentioned you've done extensive research on the life cycle, which is really fascinating that they can live in the ground for so many years, more than a decade. And when the nymphs come out, what is the difference? And, you know, a lot of gardeners want to identify what's causing holes in their yard, right? So what's the difference in the hole from where the nymph would emerge versus, like, we've seen holes dug by cicada killer wasps? What's the difference?
Well, certainly the holes that the cicadas emerge from are about the size and diameter of your pinky, and you're going to find them only under trees, not out in the open areas. Cicada killer wasps, on the other hand, they like to have a more looser soil because what they do is they sting a cicada and they bury it underground and lay an egg on it, and that provides their young. However, the cicada killer wasps will not be emerging until after the periodical cicadas have finished.
Isn't that amazing? Mother Nature knows when for this cycle to happen. The cicada killer wasps aren't going to come on too early. They're going to be right on time.
The cicada killer wasps will come out in July. The periodical cicadas are coming out now.
Oh, okay.
And the difference is that because this year it's brood 19, a 13-year cicada. If cicada killer wasps evolved to depend on a 13-year cicada, they would starve to death because a 13-year difference is not a sustainable food source. However, they are perfectly timed to come up with the annual cicadas.
Okay, that makes sense. And aside from the cicada killer wasps, which we see, and they do look pretty threatening, what are some of the other natural evolutionary type things that are going to wipe out the cicadas?
Well, they provide food for all sorts of opportunistic predators, dogs, cats, squirrels, chipmunks, deer, snakes, turtles. All those could enjoy a nice cicada meal. And that's part of the cicada's strategy for survival. They come out in such large numbers that they literally satiate their predators to where the predators just can't eat any more. I left birds out, I think, of those as well in that list. And there are still millions of cicadas left. And thinking of the numbers, they have a 1-to-1 male-female sex ratio, and the female has a little over 500 eggs.
Wow.
On average, somewhere between 400 and 600, but 500 is the average. So you think of the numbers you'll be hearing and seeing and realize that, okay, half of those are going to be laying 500 eggs each. And you can see why the numbers get so big.
My goodness. Well, and for us as gardeners, I have a couple of questions or maybe concerns to broach with you. Number one, everything that I've seen, entomologists are really asking for folks to not use pesticides. And would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. Periodical cicadas are very short-lived. They don't bite. They don't sting. They're not going to cause any real damage to any of your garden plants, for example. The only damage that they do occurs when the female lays her eggs in the terminal growth of branches where just the new growth where the leaves are. That will sometimes cause the branch to break at that point. The leaves will wither and turn brown. We call that flagging. And that can make the tree look like it's been hit by a big hailstorm. But in reality, that actually is a benefit. It's like a natural pruning. And next year, that tree will have a greater fruit set than you would normally see in a typical year.
There you go. Now, see, there's the upside. So, yes, folks that have been emailing me wondering, do I delay my planting? Do I not plant as much? You just heard Dr. Kritsky say, nope, go ahead. Carry on with what you would normally do.
If I can't, the one thing that gardeners should refrain from is if they're living in an area where there's a lot of cicadas are expected, is to delay planting any new sapling trees. If the ideal thing is to delay it till the 1st of July, because if a small young tree is in an area where the cicadas are really heavy, those cicadas can lay their eggs in every branch, and the end result will be that all those branches could wither or die, and the tree will die.
So we've been having this conversation with Dr. Gene Kritsky, retired professor emeritus of biology at Mount St. Joseph University in Cincinnati, and we're all going to be affected. We're going to see these periodical cicadas, and we're fascinated by them, honestly, Dr. Kritsky. So where are some of the websites that you find reputable that you know where people can learn a little bit more?
Well, there's also cicadasafari.org, which is the website that supports the free smartphone app, Cicada Safari. And in full disclosure here, I manage that site, That's basically all things periodical cicadas. It tells you a little bit of the history that's going on, but also has activities for kids and also promotes other websites. So other websites that are useful are cicadamania.com, which is all things cicadas, not just periodical cicadas, although that'll be the focus of that website for the next few weeks. But then it'll also cover things like annual cicadas as well.
That's so neat. And I can't wait to hear the sounds. To me, that's the sound of summer. And I have to ask, Gene, I can't let you go without asking, have you ever eaten a cicada?
Yes, I have. Oh. But I haven't since 1987.
Okay, what was it like?
They are sucking insects that feed on the fluids from the tree roots. So it's a very green flavor. I like it too. If you open up a can of cold canned asparagus and drink the liquid, that's pretty much of the flavor. But I don't eat them anymore. They've been too good. Periodical cicadas got me tenure.
Right.
And so I owe them a lot. And also, there are some studies that have found that periodical cicadas, and particularly the nymphs, but some of the adults also, if they're from trees along rural roads, do pick up quantities of lead. And so you don't want to necessarily serve them to your small children.
Ooh, thank you for that. See, learning all kinds of things. And this is going to be an amazing phenomenon to occur here in the Southeast this summer. Well, Dr. Kritsky, thank you so much for your time and enjoy your further research. Maybe we'll catch up with you sometime soon in the next few months about beekeeping. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wouldn't recommend cicadas as part of the charcuterie board that you're preparing for mom for Mother's Day. Just saying. All right, from bromeliads to cicadas and all things in between, ready to take your calls. Coming up, 404-872-0750. It's Green and Growing live on Saturday morning on WSB. An update on the weekend weather. It's great news for Mother's Day weekend. You have outdoor plans, brunch, the park, whatever. It's going to be nice, sunny today and pleasant, a high in the mid-70s. And hopefully a lot of that humidity has gotten knocked back with the cool front that came in. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 70s, staying dry, but a chance for showers in the forecast. That brought to you by Findlay Roofing and WSB radio meteorologist Christina Edwards. Jump out to the phones. I can't wait. 404-872-0750. Up first is Harry calling from Decatur. Hey, Harry, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm great. What's going on?
Yeah, I've got some what I call cluster roses that were kind of done in by the recent rain. They're very, the blooms are all gone. When should I prune? And
so cluster roses, what I learned about those, tend to grow a little bit better in moist areas. And so that's good for people who want roses, but, you know, have an area that stays wet. That's worth trying. Just like any other rose, I would go ahead and prune off the expired blooms, you know, be deadheading them for a chance for more blooms. And a lot of that rain could have knocked some of the longer canes. They have a really strong sprouting ability. So some of those canes may be hanging a little low. So you can probably leave a good, 3-4 feet of the cane and maybe cut off the part that's weighing it down if the blooms are finished. Otherwise, you just practice deadheading after they flower. And then the major pruning needs to be done like late winter time, like maybe around Valentine's Day is when I prune my knockout roses. But I kind of use that as a general rule of thumb. I don't know about specialty roses, but most roses can withstand that hard pruning like Valentine's Day, late winter time. Does that sound good?
That sounds great. I had one other question about hydrangeas.
Okay.
They seem to be, this year, for some reason, they seem to be very slow in getting color. Is there anything that I've done that I shouldn't have done? Or
what are you talking about, like the mop head, the macrophylla, the big...
the big bloom.
Yeah.
They're starting to change now, but it's very slow.
It could be something in the soil. You know, the acidity in the soil and the pH determines the color. But I did have someone call last week and say they were going from like a purple to a green, and I'm still scratching my head about that one. And yeah, mine are staying green. They're not quite blue yet, the blooms. I kind of think they're rebounding. This sounds like a wimpy kind of answer, but I truly believe when we had that Christmas freeze, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in 2022, we lost a lot of the hydrangeas last spring. A lot of people were very dismayed that they did not get hydrangea blooms last year. So I kind of think the plants are still somewhat rebounding from that. So that could have something to do with it as well. I mean, I know that sounds like a weird excuse because I'm talking about a weather event that happened a year and a half ago, but it was very significant. I mean, I was just at a garden club meeting where they were even saying, we will remember that Christmas freeze because it had such a detrimental impact on so many things. So I don't think it's anything you need to do, Harry. I don't think it's anything you need to worry about. Just let nature take its course as long as it's still got all the nice green leaves and the foliage and stuff on it. And it's flowering. I mean, that's steps ahead of what we were seeing this time last year. Just go with it. I think there's nothing you need to do. And y'all know with the macrophylla, the mop head hydrangeas, that's where you can add stuff to the soil to change the colors. But I like them just the way they are. There's so many different varieties of hydrangeas that we can have such a good time with. Well, Harry, thank you so much for the call. I hope I helped. Thanks for talking about cluster roses. That's not something I get calls on very often. When we come back, talking about dogwoods, magnolia trees, and we'll hear from you. 404-872-0750.
It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
Halfway through the show. It happens so fast. Welcome back to Green and Growing on every Saturday morning from 6 to 9. Took over 4 years ago for Walter Reeves and the Lawn and Garden Show. That ran 26 years here on WSB. I don't know that I have that kind of tenure, but who knows? It's awfully fun. It's a fun gig. I love the people I'm meeting. I love the experts that I've come to call friends who have helped tremendously with the show over the years. And I'm learning a lot, and I learn more from you. So I want you to call 404-872-0750. And talking about hydrangeas with Harry's call there, I want to turn your eyes again to my website, wsbradio.com/greenandgrowing, and check out the events tab. I mean, guys, I've got stuff listed all the way through the middle of June. Fun stuff. And one of which is the annual American Hydrangea Society tour that happens every June. And we're so fortunate that the American Hydrangea Society is based right here in the Atlanta area. Their annual tour this year, it's going to be Saturday, June 8th, rain or shine from 9 to 5. There's beautiful gardens all over the metro Atlanta area that you go and see. They recommend their sponsors, people that support them, and people that sell beautiful hydrangeas. Again, this is top of mind because I was recently at Scottsdale Farms in Milton. I did not realize there was hundreds of varieties of hydrangeas. I mean, I kind of knew, but you know, I know there's families, right? There's the mop head, the macrophylla, panicle, the bloom later. They have like a grape cone type shape. There's oak leaf, there's Annabelle. But my goodness, you could get every color, every size, Wow. Yeah. So the American Hydrangea Society, check them out. And I also recently wrote an article, thanks to the Georgia Hosta Society for kind of getting on my radar, promoting their event coming up. That is today, 10 to 2, the Georgia Hosta Society Ruby Anniversary Hosta Show. So I wrote an article you can find on the website as well, Caring for a Garden Favorite, Hostas, What to Do. And I thought to do that because I've had so many people submit pictures of what's eating my hosta. And if you have a picture, I can almost tell you what's eating it, whether it's all the way down to an insect. A slug is probably the most common answer, but then even a rabbit, a deer, who knows? So yeah, read that. You might find that interesting. And look at their website for pictures of so many cool hostas. I mean, they're grown for their foliage, their leaves. You know, they love shade, so we love them here in Georgia because of all of our trees. Just a fantastic plant, right? Okay, jump out to the phones. Another southern plant, southern magnolia, one that we love so much. And Eddie in Dunwoody is calling about his magnolia trees. Hey, Eddie, good morning.
Good morning, Ashley. It's funny. I was going to say, first of all, how seamlessly you've been since taking over the show from Walter. And to hear it's 4 years, I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you. I can't believe it myself. I pinch myself sometimes thinking, what happened?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, my neighbor replaced the fence between our houses last week, and I had two magnolias that were hanging over their yard, and he asked me to take them down. So I did. And I do a lot of, you know, smoking and grilling, and I use the wood, so I wanted to look up the wood to see if it was beneficial for anything. And it's not. But it turns out that there are some medicinal benefits of magnolia bark. And I was just blown away. I mean, you chop it up, you put it in grain alcohol for 2 weeks, and then I'll just read off some of the benefits. Anxiety treatment, reduces gingivitis.
Oh, my gosh.
Menstrual cramps, respiratory illnesses, issues, anti-allergenic, promotes weight loss.
Wow.
Manages diabetes and improves liver health. So,
okay, that's pretty impressive. We have a medicine cabinet right there in our tree, huh?
Absolutely, and I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV, but I was just really surprised, you know, to find that out.
I love the wood. I had a young man on about it just over a year ago. Lachlan was his name, and I met him at an arts and crafts festival. He's like 17, 18 years old and has a group of friends that he started a company, Handmade by Healy, and he did woodworking. And some of the stuff on his table, I was like, wait, you made that? And magnolia was one of the things that I saw. And it's such a light color wood. It's really, really a pretty color. Even with the stain, it's just so light and you can still see the graining in it and things like that. So woodworkers like it for furniture and millworking and things like that. But often, too, for I think like boxes and pallets, because it's not a wood that's going to last forever. I think it's more apt to decay. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I like
dense.
The wood. It's pretty.
I mean, a small log is extremely heavy, so it's probably just has a lot of moisture in it. But I just thought I'd run that by you. I think it's interesting.
That is. That's really interesting. So we can use that. We can have cicadas for a little snack we just learned, and then we're off and running. We could survive in the wild.
Yeah, eat the cicadas and drink the tree.
Oh, gosh, when you said grain alcohol, that brought me back to college. That wasn't a pleasant flashback.
what I went through trying to go out and buy some.
What, grain alcohol?
Yeah, Everclear.
Oh, my God. I mean, I think we either used it in... I can't believe I'm talking about this at 7:40 in the morning, either in a Jello shots or like the stupid punch we made just in a big cooler.
Yeah, the punch where you put all the fruit in it that you could find and then a 30-gallon pail.
Yes, and DeMarco, he's my age. He's over there shaking his head too. We're not ashamed to admit that. I mean, you do what you got to do. When you're in college, you don't have a lot of money, so taste isn't a priority.
Well, anyway, congratulations on the show. I'm really happy to be part of your fourth year.
Well, thank you. Hey, give me a call anytime when you find interesting stuff like that. Give me a call and keep me company on a Saturday.
In 2 weeks when I ferment it and see what it does.
Well, yeah, there you go. Check back in. I want to hear the good news or the bad news. Only you'll know. So good to hear from you this morning. What a cool question, too. Magnolia wood. And, you know, in looking up a little bit before taking Eddie's call, I saw that he was talking about magnolia wood and all the different things to do with it. But I found this online. There's a specialty wood company in Gainesville, CAG. I don't know if they say CAG or if they say CAG, Specialty Wood in Gainesville. And they've got a fantastic website, a pricing sheet, ideas for projects of all of the wood slabs that you can buy and things you can do in your home and beams and countertops and barn doors and all that kind of thing. So shout out to them. Like, what an impressive website. And that's kind of where I thought maybe Eddie was going. Like, if he... you know, didn't know a use for the wood, and he did the research, realizing that you can't use it in a smoker. It does have toxicity in it. But I wonder if you could call a woodworker like these guys and be like, hey, I have some great wood, or Lachlan, you know, that young man that was making stuff out of wood. If you can track those people down and say, I don't know what kind of trade we can make, but I have some great wood that you can use, and maybe you can build me a countertop or a table or something. I don't know. That's pretty neat. I like bartering. 404-872-0750. Back out to the phones we go. We'll talk to Judy from Jefferson. Hey there.
Good morning.
What's going on with you?
I have a hummingbird feeder. Haven't had any hummingbirds yet. Maybe they're just late. But I get ants in the feeder. And I want to know, is there a way to keep the ants out? And if I don't keep them out, which means I would constantly have to be changing the water, will they drink from the hummingbird feeder with the ants in it?
I have found that they will. The hummingbirds, because there's so many holes in the feeder that they're smart enough to just kind of go to another one where the ants aren't nearby. And I've even seen a hummingbird share the feeder with a yellow jacket, too. Sometimes
awesome.
The yellow jackets get in there. Like when I take it apart to clean it each time, sometimes they'll be in the interior moat just drowned the yellow jackets. I'm like, how did you get in there? But I don't know. But no, I don't think it scares them off. You do need to watch out for praying mantis. Oh my goodness. If there's a praying mantis on your hummingbird feeder, it will kill the hummingbirds. That's really the only thing that's harmful to them. But Judy, what I would do is when you look at the bird store, like Wild Birds Unlimited or a place like that, an ant moat. Have you seen that? It's just like a red upside down cup and it hangs on the, it hangs on the hook, but above your feeder. So if the ants are coming from an arm or from a branch trying to get down that hanger to the hummingbird feeder, the moat is just an upside down cup that you fill with water and they can't make it past that to get down to the feeder. And that in no way impacts the hummingbirds going to and from the feeder.
Well, the feeder I have has a little moat built on the top of it.
Oh, and you're still getting ants?
I'm still getting ants. Yes. My friend suggested Vaseline on the little ends of the feeder.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Not on the feeder itself, though. We don't want the hummingbirds coming in contact with that. But anywhere where the ants would crawl to then get to the feeder. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Love your show. Been listening since way back when.
So you're a Walter fan too, right?
I am. He was my secret crush for many years.
My mom's too. When she found out I was working for him, I started working for him, gosh, I don't even know, 10 years ago. And she was like, Walter Reeves is the best.
Oh, he was. I just enjoyed listening to him so much.
Oh, well, thank you for the kind words and thanks for letting me take his place. I'm enjoying it.
And I enjoy your Facebook.
Oh,
thank
yes.
You.
Thanks, Judy. Yeah, that's a great plug for anybody that doesn't follow me on Facebook. Sometimes I'm a little more active than not, but it's all me. All the posts are me. I've been in a funk the last week or two since I've come back from vacation, probably because I'm back from vacation. So the posts haven't been as often, but search Facebook for Green and Growing WSB and like or follow the page, please, because I love keeping in touch with you guys and hearing from you. The most recent thing I put out was about the cicadas and everybody checking in from all different parts of Georgia. Yeah, we have them. They're crazy. No, none here in Hickory Flat or Canton. I mean, it's just kind of neat to see the widespread, you know, effects of the cicadas, how loud they are. They're driving people crazy. And actually, somebody just asked a question. Who was it? It was Rusty. Rusty asking about the difference between our katydids, cicadas. Is it the same thing? And going back to that interview that I just had with Dr. Kritsky from the university up in the Ohio area, no, they're not the same. A katydid is in the family of a grasshopper and looks like a grasshopper, whereas a cicada has the translucent wings and the bulging eyes and just a whole different body shape. They both do live in the trees, but katydids are largely nocturnal and they'll sing at nighttime, whereas the cicadas, they're active during the day. And I always relay the story when I first heard a cicada and didn't know that's what I was hearing. I was in college drinking Everclear at the University of Georgia in Athens and walking around the campus during the day from class to class. I heard this terrible, constant buzzing sound. And I always thought for years, probably when I was there, that it was the crosswalks. Like there were so many student crosswalks all over campus and they'd light up as you're crossing the street. And I just thought, my God, those make the most awful noise. And come to find out years later, I finally had this moment like, it was the cicadas back then. We had a pretty big emergence back then when I was in college in the early 2000s, but nothing like this, nothing like these two broods coming at the same time. So no, Katie did, long story short. Not the same as a cicada, but a great question from Rusty. 404-872-0750. When we come back, Sally from Fairburn's checking in, and she's got some advice for you, Judy. So I want to hear from her to keep ants out of your hummingbird feeders and the top three things to do in the landscape this weekend. You're listening to WSB. All right, before we get to the top three things to do in the landscape this weekend, I want to check in with Sally, who is calling with a solution to the ants and the hummingbird feeders. Hey, Sally.
Hey, Ashley, and I look forward to your show every week.
Oh, thank
so
you. I
much.
Do too. Thank you.
I heard the lady talking about that, and it drove me crazy. I would have ants in my hummingbird feeders, and none of my friends would. And I'm like, what is the problem? And I had that moat, and they would crawl across their bodies to get to it. So I got a pole, one of the little metal poles to hang my hummingbird feeder on.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I've got to find a solution. I did, a Vaseline didn't work. Nothing worked. And so I got ant spray, And every time I put my hummingbird feeder before I hang it, I spray that pole with ant spray. And it has worked like a charm the last 3 years.
And it's not dripping down onto the feeder or anything, right?
I spray the pole really good before I put the ant spray on. I don't put it on the top hook. I put it from the ground. I do the the grass.
Right, I go
halfway up the pole. And it works like a charm.
Okay, yeah. So coming from, I didn't think about that, like a shepherd's hook. I didn't ask Judy, I don't guess. I don't know if she said she was hanging it overhead or.
They went down, they did fish wire. They have done everything. My girlfriend doesn't get any on hers and at her house.
Isn't that
funny? I get them everywhere.
Well, and then God forbid you spill a little bit, you know, when you're taking it back out to hang it, like then you leave a trail of sugar water and then there it
ends. I've done that too. And it's awful. So
okay.
I make sure that I carry it on a plate. And I spray that hook really good. I don't get up at the top. And then if we have a really heavy rain, I spray the bottom of the hook. And I've just had a great time not having any ants on it.
I love that. Well, thanks for that, Sally. I appreciate that. That's a good tip. And, I mean, you can always use ant spray, right? I mean, I use Windex because I'm cheap and I've already got it in the house. If they're in the house, I use Windex and it kills them right away. But that's probably a good thing to have. And I started off the show today by saying a good thing to have would be fungicide or whatever, because you're going to need that with all the rain that we've had. You're going to need like a copper fungicide or something like that for leaf spot and diseases, all of that. Make sure your plants are drying out. Make sure your sprinklers aren't running while you're sleeping after we've just had a rain. My neighbor, I wake up to the sound of their sprinkler on and I was like, it's raining, or it literally just rained all day yesterday and your sprinklers are on. But once that's getting your landscape plants wet, my goodness, I mean, that's going to take them that much longer to dry out because now they're saturated. And keep in mind, too, when we're getting into those drier months where we may experience a drought, we're not going to have water or rain for maybe 2-3 weeks. Water everything at the base. Don't water your rose bushes and your other things overhead. Water at the base. A, it's getting more water directly to where it needs to be, the roots. But B, you're keeping that foliage dry to cut back on diseases, things like that. So, yeah, when we come back, we can do the top three at the beginning of the 8 o'clock hour. I can do it wherever in the show I want. That's what DeMarco says. It's your show. You do the top three wherever, because I've got some good tips. So stay tuned. Hour number three. I want you to call and check in as well. 404-872-0750. Very easy to do to become a part of Green and Growing.